She was born an enslaved girl on the edges of empire, traded like property, silenced by history. Yet when the conquistadors came ashore, steel glinting in the sun, tongues foreign and sharp, it was her voice they needed most. They called her a traitor, a whore, a mother of genocide. But none of them asked what it was like to be caught between gods and men, between empires and extinction. This is not the story of Cortez. This is the story of La Malinche, the woman who spoke the words that toppled a civilization and bore the scars of conquest on her soul. You've heard the conqueror's side. Now, for the first time, hear hers. If you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. If you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Before the ships arrived, before the blood soaked the altars and the gods were torn from their stone thrones, there was a girl. She was not born into power. She was born into silence. In the humid lowlands of Cuauhtlacoc, far from the golden temples of Tenochtitlan, the girl who would come to be known as La Malinche, or Malintzin, or Dona Marina, depending on who was speaking, was born to a Nahua noble family. But nobility meant nothing in a world carved apart by war, famine, and the growing shadow of a continent she had never seen. Her father died, her mother remarried, and in the dead of night, the girl disappeared. Some said she was sold. Others whispered she was given away to hide the shame of a second child. But the truth was buried in the language of betrayal, and it would follow her forever. She was traded as a slave to the Maya, stripped of her name, her land, her future. But not her ears, not her tongue. Malinalli Tenapel, as she was once called, listened. She listened as the Mayan merchants barked orders in a tongue the Aztecs despised. She memorized the rhythms of the language, and she stored away the bitterness of silence. Years later, when Hernan Cortez stepped onto the burning shores of the Yucatan with swords in hand and God on his lips, he had no idea that his greatest weapon would not be steel. It would be her. Among the 20 women given to Cortez as tribute after the Battle of Patoncan, she was one. The others were nameless in the record, lost to time. But one woman stood apart, the only one who spoke both Nahuatl and Mayan. Cortez had no idea what she was worth. But the friars who recorded the events later would write. And among them was one woman who understood both tongues, and thus the Castilian tongue entered the Valley of Mexico. Her voice became the bridge between worlds, between a godless army and a god-filled empire. In time, she learned Spanish. And so, in the space of weeks, La Malinche became something never before seen in the New World. A woman who could translate from the language of the oppressor to that of the Aztec emperor, without trembling. She would kneel beside Cortez as he spoke to Moctezuma's emissaries, not simply repeating words, but shaping the tone, translating not just language, but power, fear, negotiation. They called her La Lengua, the tongue. And from that moment, the conquest of Mexico would not be written only in blood or steel, but in conversation, manipulation, and misdirection. And she was at the center of it all. Some said she betrayed her people. But what people remained for her to betray? She had been cast out, bought, renamed, abandoned, and now, for the first time seen, Cortez gave her a new name, Dona Marina. And with that name came power, but also a price. The old gods would soon fall. The empire of the Mexica would collapse. And everywhere she went, La Malinche would walk at the side of the man who brought it all down, as his interpreter, his strategist, his consort, and eventually, the mother of his child. A child born of conquest and native blood. A child many would later say marked the beginning of mestizage, the blending of indigenous and Spanish bloodlines. Some say she was the mother of a new race. Others say she was the mother of betrayal. But they never ask what it was like to stand in the shadow of two worlds, trying to survive while history sharpened its blade at her feet. This is where the story begins, not with the conquistadors, not with the burning of temples, but with the girl who watched and listened and endured. Because before there was conquest, there was her. By the time the Spanish marched inland, dragging cannons through jungle mud and baptizing rivers with the names of saints, La Malinche was no longer just a translator. She was the key. She walked beside Cortez, never ahead, never behind. Not a slave. Not a wife. Something else. Something harder to define. She was not free, but she was necessary. And in a world where usefulness meant survival, she had learned how to become indispensable. At night, as the soldiers lit fires and whispered of golden glory, she listened. And what she heard terrified her. They spoke not only of Moctezuma, the emperor they had yet to meet, but of gods that bled, cities of skulls, and an empire held together by fear and tribute. They believed they were ordained by heaven to conquer. And they believed the people of this land, her land, would crumble like clay before the cross. But La Malinche knew better. She had seen the reach of the Aztec Empire. She had seen the tributary villages, the forced sacrifices, the crushed rebellions. She had seen women disappear into temples, never to return. She knew the Mexica were not gods. And she knew they were feared. So when Cortez asked, "Who will join us?" she was the one who knew the answer. It was she who spoke to the Totonacs, coaxing their rage into alliance. It was she who revealed the pain of the Tlaxcalans, centuries of oppression under the Aztec boot. She spoke with the voice of one who had been broken, who had been traded like currency. And they listened, not because she was Spanish, but because she understood the wound of empire from the inside out. History would later record that the Spanish were outnumbered, that they survived by cunning. What it often forgets is that without La Malinche, the Spanish would have never found their allies. They would not have marched to Tenochtitlan with thousands of native warriors at their backs. They would have died in the jungle. The march was not just across geography. It was across loyalty, across identity. And for Malinche, each step further inland was a step deeper into the collapse of the world she once knew. When they reached Cholula, it was she who warned Cortez of betrayal. She was told, by whisper, by glance, that the Aztecs were planning a massacre. That Cortez and his men were being led into a trap. And when she told him, the response was swift and brutal. The Spanish turned the trap inside out. They slaughtered thousands. The streets ran red. It was one of the first massacres of the campaign. And some would say it was only possible, because she spoke. Because she did not stay silent. But was she loyal to Cortez? Or merely protecting her own life? That question has haunted her memory for centuries. Cortez praised her, trusted her. She stood beside him as they entered Tenochtitlan, the heart of the Mexica world. A city of white stone and floating gardens, where causeways stretched across the water like arms of an ancient god. There, in the court of Emperor Moctezuma, she translated the first word spoken between conqueror and conquered. But she did more than that, she shaped the meaning. The emperor offered hospitality. Cortez demanded submission. And La Malinche, standing between them, made those opposing languages meet, not as equals, but as inevitabilities. To Moctezuma, she was a native. To Cortez, she was a miracle. To the priests, a pagan. To the soldiers, a prize. And to herself, she was a survivor. And in a world made of sharp edges and broken promises, that was all she could afford to be. As the city swallowed them in hospitality and the Spanish plotted from within its golden halls, La Malinche stood at the center of it all, the only one who truly understood what was coming. Because the drums were beating again. And this time they did not herald welcome. They warned of war. The days inside Tenochtitlan were filled with smoke and tension. To the Spanish, it was a city of wonder. Suspended in the middle of a lake, its streets glided with canoes, and its markets buzzed with more life than any port in Spain. To them, it felt like the edge of a divine miracle, or a devil's illusion. But to La Malinche, it was the beating heart of a dying world. She moved like a shadow between gods and soldiers, temples and muskets. She saw the gold on the walls and the greed in the Spaniards' eyes. And though Moctezuma welcomed them into the palace, gifted them treasures and fed their foreign mouths, she sensed it. This city was holding its breath. Moctezuma had miscalculated. He believed he could control the Spaniards, that hospitality would tame them, that perhaps they truly were gods, as the omens had warned. But gods did not eat like men. They did not stink of horses. They did not bleed when cut. La Malinche watched as the illusion cracked. She translated every conversation, every veiled threat dressed in politeness. Every command from Cortez that wore a smile. And when Cortez learned of a potential uprising, that the emperor's tolerance was wearing thin, that rebellion stirred among the priests, he acted. He took Moctezuma hostage. Held captive in his own palace, the emperor became a puppet. And beside the puppet stood La Malinche, delivering orders in a voice that sounded like her mother's language, but now carried the weight of Spanish steel. Outside, the city burned with whispers. Inside, tension thickened into dread. Then came the massacre at the Great Temple. While Cortez left briefly to face a Spanish rival at the coast, he placed the city in the hands of Pedro de Alvarado, a man whose cruelty was legend even among the conquistadors. during a sacred festival, while unarmed nobles danced to the drums of their ancestors, Alvarado's men struck. They blocked the exits, drew swords, and slaughtered them. Blood soaked the ceremonial grounds. The music stopped mid-beat. When Cortez returned, the city had changed. Tenochtitlan, once silent and curious, now roared. The people rebelled. Stones flew through the air. Arrows rained from rooftops. And the gods, once ignored, seemed to scream from the temples. La Malinche stood at the center of it all, a native woman in a Spanish camp, surrounded by people who now saw her not as a bridge, but as a traitor. They called her Malinquista. It would become a curse, a name that meant betrayal, disloyalty, a woman who sold her soul to foreigners. The irony was that she had never truly had a homeland to betray. As the Spanish fled the city under the cover of night in what would become known as La Noche Triste, the Night of Sorrows, La Malinche rode with them. Through narrow causeways flooded by water and blood, with screaming behind and silence ahead. Soldiers drowned. Horses fell. Gold sank into the lake bed. And in the midst of this chaos, she did not cry out. She did not weep. She translated. She survived. The empire had turned against itself. And now, the war would no longer be about misunderstanding or manipulation. It would be about annihilation. La Malinche knew. The gods were no longer listening. Only men remained. And they wanted revenge. The second march to Tenochtitlan was not a mission. It was a reckoning. La Malinche no longer stood at the side of a hopeful conquistador, but of a man who knew what he had to destroy to claim the new world. Hernán Cortés had tasted both humiliation and power, and now he marched not with a handful of Spaniards, but with tens of thousands of indigenous allies, Tlaxcalans, Totonacs, and others who had once lived under the grinding boot of Aztec dominance. And at the head of that force rode a woman once sold for a blanket. She no longer flinched when soldiers barked commands or priests muttered prayers over the dead. She had learned how to stand beside them, eyes fixed forward, heart silent. Her name was spoken now with awe and hatred alike. Dona Marina, they called her, with respect. But in the alleys of the empire she had helped unravel, the whispers were different. Malinquista. The wound of that word would outlive her body. As the coalition army reached the lakeside city again, they found it prepared. Tenochtitlan had fortified itself, burned bridges, dug trenches. The siege that followed would be one of the bloodiest in the history of conquest. La Malinche translated every parley, every message of surrender or defiance. Sometimes she softened Cortez's threats. Other times she sharpened them. No one knew for whom her heart truly beat. Was she a lover to the conqueror? A spy among the enemies of her blood? Or simply a woman who had long since realized that in a world of violence, the sharpest weapon was language? She walked among the wounded. She saw indigenous soldiers die by the hundreds, not just for the Spanish, but for their own ancient grievances. The conquest was not one empire falling. It was many wounds reopening all at once. In time, the Aztecs starved. Disease ripped through the city. The gods did not intervene. When the Spanish finally broke through, Tenochtitlan collapsed not in fire, but in hunger, in exhaustion, in silence. The Emperor Cuauhtémoc, Moctezuma's nephew, the last to rule, was captured. And once again, it was La Malinche who stood nearby when the fate of an empire was sealed with a word. The city fell. The altars were smashed. The stones of the temples were repurposed to build cathedrals. But not everything was erased. From the rubble of the old world, something new began to form. Something ugly, violent, but inevitable. The fusion of two bloodlines, two worldviews. And again, it was La Malinche who stood at the center of that moment. She bore Cortez's son, Martin, one of the first mestizo children of the conquest. The priests called the boy a symbol of union. The soldiers called him a curiosity. But in her arms, he was neither prophecy nor metaphor. He was hers, and he carried a history that would never fully belong to any land. La Malinche never wrote her own story. Her voice is absent from the letters, the chronicles, the records kept by the men who used her. But her fingerprints are on every page of that history. She did not wield a sword. She wielded a tongue sharpened by necessity. And though her name would become a curse in the mouths of patriots, her legacy was far more complex. She was not merely a traitor or a mother of conquest. She was a mirror, reflecting back the cruelties and choices of a world that gave her none. She was a question, and that question would echo long after the empire she helped bring down crumbled into myth. After the temples fell and the crosses rose, history did what it always does. It chose its storytellers. And they were not women. La Malinche disappeared from the chronicles soon after the conquest. Her name flickered briefly in Spanish letters and Friar's reports, always as a supporting figure, a vessel, never as a voice. Cortez mentioned her as my interpreter, my tongue, never as the woman who had, in many ways, made the conquest possible. She was not given land, not granted noble title. She was not commemorated in stone or song. In the new world she helped midwife into being, she became a silence, deeper than any grave. But history is not a straight line. It is a spiral. And in the centuries that followed, her name would return. Not as a saint, not as a heroine, but as a wound. To many in Mexico, Malinche became a symbol of betrayal, the woman who sold her people for a white man's favor. Her name was turned into a slur, Malinchismo, a word used to describe those who preferred foreign things over their own culture, who bowed to outside power. But what culture had protected her? What people had claimed her? She had been cast out as a child, sold, given away, made to survive in the mouths of strangers. And when she rose, it was not by conquest but by comprehension, of language, of intention, of survival. Still, her legacy was rewritten not by facts but by feeling. Poets condemned her. Nationalists reviled her. She was called the mother of the conquered, of shame. And yet, her story could not be buried. In the 20th century, scholars began to return to the fragments, reassembling her from the margins of conquistador narratives. Feminists saw in her not a traitor, but a victim of systems beyond her control. Others saw a strategist, a woman who wielded what little power she had with precision and consequence. In murals, she began to reappear, not bowed, not broken, but upright, eyes forward, holding her child. In novels, she became a voice of resistance, of complexity, of the untranslatable. In classrooms, her name sparked debates about identity, survival, and the cost of empire. And in whispered conversations between women, especially indigenous women, her story was reclaimed. She was no longer just the traitor or the translator. She was something more dangerous, more sacred, a symbol of what it means to endure in a world that has already decided what you are. Even today, La Malinche lives in contradiction. Some curse her, some canonize her, but no one forgets her, because she did what men feared most. She changed the course of history, without ever lifting a sword. Her death is not recorded. No grave is marked. No final words remain. La Malinche, Malintzin, Dona Marina, simply vanished from the written world, the way women often do once their usefulness to empire fades. Yet, her spirit never left. In the silence she left behind, nations were born. And in the child she bore, bloodlines tangled, histories collided. Martin Cortez, her son with Hernan Cortez, would grow into a man seen as both bridge and bastard. Educated in Spain, noble by decree, native by birth. A living paradox. Like her, there are those who insist La Malinche was merely a tool, an accidental cog in the machinery of conquest. Others insist she was a master strategist, navigating survival in a world that offered her only two choices: disappear or endure. But perhaps both are true, because the truth about La Malinche lies in the spaces between stories, in the unspoken, the untranslated. She is the silence between a question and its answer, the breath before the blade falls, the whisper that changes the meaning of a war cry. She remains one of the most polarizing figures in the Americas, neither fully hero nor villain. She is the prism through which we see our own reflection, distorted by history, sharpened by time. She forces us to ask, who gets to survive? Who gets to speak? And what does it cost to be heard? In the post-colonial world, her legacy ripples. In literature, she haunts the margins. In politics, her name still stings. In identity, she represents the wound that births a new self, painful, unresolved, but inevitable. Every generation rediscovers her. Every storyteller reinterprets her. But the truth, the honest, complicated, devastating truth, is that La Malinche was not the conqueror, nor the conquered. She was the space between. She was the language. And long after the pyramids crumbled and the swords rusted, it is her voice that still echoes. Because in the end, empires rise and fall. But the ones who shape their stories live forever. And so ends the story of La Malinche, not with a monument, not with a tomb, but with an echo. An echo carried in the bones of a nation still defining itself. In the tongues of two continents forever changed by her words. In the silence between betrayal and survival. She was not a queen, not a conqueror. She did not lead armies. But she shaped the outcome of one of the most brutal conquests in human history. With nothing but her mind, her voice, and her will to live. We may never know her final thoughts, her final days, or what name she whispered to herself when no one was listening. But we know this. Empires rose and crumbled around her. Languages collided because of her. And a new world was born in her shadow. She was not the villain. She was not the hero. She was the hinge on which history turned. This has been Caribbean History, La Malinche, the woman who changed the fate of empires. Thank you for listening. And remember, the most powerful figures in history are often the ones never meant to be remembered. Until next time, stay curious.